This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center. It's time for the Coast Guard afternoon briefing. Commander Steve McCall is now speaking.
From the damaged Exxon Valdez to the Exxon Baton Rouge. We've been able to maintain pumping rate at more than 80,000 gallons per hour, and we're expecting to complete the transfer project within 7 days. Weather and functioning equipment permitting. High winds and a 4 to 6 foot chop have forced the skimmers to seek shelter and the small boats that are working with them. Skimming operations will resume when the weather gets better. Weather conditions have also halted dispersant application and burning in place operations. The Coast Guard flyovers reveal that about a half a mile wide oil slick extends southwest from the accident site for more than 40 miles. The slick's leading edge is near Seal Rock, and probably by this time it will have impacted on Seal Rock. And there's a light shoreline staining on Naked Island and heavy oil staining on the north shore of the Smith Islands, both big and little. Eleanor Island is also impacted, and if you look between Naked Island and Eleanor, you're getting kind of a back eddy with heavy sheen, and then the oil is making its way down along the next island down from Eleanor, which is Igloo, I think, and then going on down to Night Island. So it's working its way down, eventually, you know, through the straits between Naked Island and Montague Island. Secondary Coast Guard priority is to open the port of Valdez in a tightly controlled fashion for commercial traffic. I'm planning to allow vessel traffic beginning hopefully early tomorrow, again, weather permitting. Since vessels have to operate outside of the normal shipping channels because of the spill, I'm requiring to have the vessels take on a pilot down at the anchorage at Knoll's Head instead of the normal pilot station. And we'll probably have some of our people on board some of the ships going in and going out. So we're attempting to get somewhat normal traffic back into town so we can ease the concern of the people in the lower 48 concerning crude oil. NOAA has put out this latest oil spill prediction. It's outside, and you're welcome to that. And we're working on getting some copies of the federal regulations concerning operating a vessel while under the influence. That's being worked up. I don't think we have it yet, but it's being worked on. And I'll take a few questions, and I kind of got to get back to see what we're doing. The rate of pumping is 80,000 gallons.
How much dispersion per hour.
Excuse me?
How much dispersion has actually been applied?
Whenever we got a chance to put out anything other than the, you know, several test sessions. So I'd say probably, I think each session was about 5,000 gallons.
Why does the rough weather make it so you can't put out dispersion? What is it about?
Well, the problem we have, yeah, it's kind of a catch-22. You need a certain amount of turbulence in the water to get the dispersant working properly. The problem we had this morning was that we had so high winds we couldn't get the aircraft up out of Valdez to be the spotter aircraft. And also, I've been told flying a C-130 at 50 feet above the water in this kind of wind with that kind of chop is very difficult. So that kind of put the hold on that first thing this morning. And when we were finally able to get up, we realized that wind coming out of the north, as strong as it was, had moved all the oil away from where it was, nicely contained, to where it's progressing to now, as you see on the charts. Also, a wind out of the east coming out of Orca Inlet added to that easterly shove to push that oil into the Night Island Montague area.
How far did the oil slick go since the last time it was charted? I'd like to get an idea of how far
wind has pushed it.
That's what we're kind of working on now. We had a flight earlier today that basically was saying it was just starting to impact on Smith Islands, and I just got back about 20 minutes ago, and it's getting now almost to Seal Island. So it's moving fairly rapidly.
Are you concerned about
the nature of those islands where it has impacted already? Do they have a lot of wildlife on them?
Okay, I can't answer that with real accuracy. The fish and wildlife people are better. But there has been concern for those islands in general. The whole area where it's going was concerned, and what individual resource and what quantity, I don't know.
Thank you.
How high are the winds out there now?
The winds are, I believe, starting to drop off. They didn't seem as bad as they were, but they're still nowhere near what they were earlier on.
Is there much use in using dispersants now that the wind has broken up the slick into these various fingers and scattered patches?
It's several things. A lot of that dispersant is churned up too much now to what they call chocolate mousse, oil and water mixture. And there's no real test data or no real data available to say how well, if at all, dispersants work in churned up oil. You know, you want to put the dispersant on the water, on the oil, and then have it agitate and work to disperse the oil. But after it's already been agitated and mixed with water, we don't know how well it's going to work. We might try it in a couple of areas that we can still see some oil coming down, but the timing is critical, and we're not sure we can get it done in time because of the speed at which this oil is moving. And of course, when it's moving into these sensitive areas, I don't have the authority to use a dispersant anyway. So
last time we were told that dispersants was the last option. Does that mean that there are no options at this point?
No. What I was saying last night was, the preferred method is and always will be, until something else phenomenal comes along, is mechanical oil spill recovery. Other tools we've that are coming online, technology type, are dispersants and then this burning. But there are other tools to get the job done. Obviously now with the oil being spread so far and aging, dispersant issue is fading rapidly. The burning could possibly still work if we can get the oil concentrated in a proper area. I don't know. That's a good point also. Again, there isn't any real data on how well the burning would work on roofs, whether or not you could keep the fire going because of all the water that's churned up in it. Okay, for certain areas in Prince William Sound, like in the areas around the tanker lanes, the regional response team has met for the last 2 years. We came up with an agreement where the on-scene coordinator, myself in this case, has the authority without discussing with the other members to use it. There's area twos, which I'm required to talk to people about and get their concurrence, and there's area threes, which are not strictly prohibited, but highly unrecommended. Excuse me?
Once this oil has been...
is gone to the bottom, whose responsibility is it? Is it yours or is it Exxon's?
Okay, well, I'm not an expert on the function of dispersants. There was a fellow here last night who did a lot of speaking on that, but yeah. It doesn't necessarily go to the bottom.
But once we give Exxon permission to use it, then you are then responsible for it, right?
Responsible for ordering it issued, yes. I'm the responsible party for ordering it issued.
Do you have any more reason to believe that vessel was operated under the influence of alcohol?
So we haven't gotten the blood alcohol tests back.
What has taken so long to get those tests back?
Getting things moved in and out of Alaska, like a lot of problems we have.
The options.
You said that stability of the ship with the Valdez shifting?
Yeah, I just learned that myself when I got back in. It has shifted, so I think 4 degrees on the compass. It's a concern, but they're not getting ready to abandon the ship. It's a concern, and they're keeping an eye on it, and they're having, obviously, there's other vessels standing by.
Can you do calculations
and give us an exact distance that the spill has traveled? So that we can get a real good grip on how fast it's moving, how much territory it's covering?
Sure, we will, because it's still moving as we're speaking, it's still moving.
Dispersants aren't going to do that much good, burning probably won't work, and mechanical means are beyond that. So what's left?
Right, that's what, when I got off the helicopter this afternoon, I was speaking with the people from Exxon and the federal and state resource agencies and the Coast Guard. I got together real fast before this news conference. And basically what the plan of attack now is to move all that skimming equipment down to that area and those booms. And that oil is getting caught up in all the little coves and bays on those islands. As long as the wind doesn't shift 180 degrees and go the other way, that oil will stay on those areas that it's impacted on. So now you get down there, you cover those areas off with boom, and then get in there and skim it. And probably, and then at some point, there'll be the need for a large manpower force for doing the shoreline cleanup aspect of it. So again, when I mentioned a mechanical oil spill recovery is the preferred, I meant machinery and booms, you know, pitchforks and manpower is also mechanical, but that's the hardest and the most difficult.
It's kind of assuming that the weather gets better to use the booms around the island, right? You can't use them there.
Well, they're good. They're being mobilized and moved down to that area right now. The wind has dropped off now, somewhat now, from what it was in the morning. So those boats that had taken shelter are getting underway and moving down to that area. I know they're working on getting establishing base camps. We're planning on moving our Coast Guard cutter to rush down there for as a command and control point. Because if it's a helicopter pad, we can get on and off it very easily. The program has shifted now, and the method of attack has changed dramatically.
Is it fair to say that the window of opportunity to use dispersants and burning is closed? I mean, you know, the weather and time have really worked against you today.
We're pretty close with dispersants. Booming and burning, I think, depending when the wind drops down and if there's enough oil in an area where we could try to boom it, burn it, we might.
Not much more chance in using dispersants, do you think?
Not for much longer, women.
But they're in burning today.
No, too windy.
Okay. Is your opinion that the bulk of the spill has now been sort of scattered around the vast expanse of the sound and we've kind of lost control of the mass?
Well, it's not in a tightly controlled mass like it was last night. It has moved and strung out, not all over the sound, in a definite path. It hasn't gone over toward Orca Inlet. It hasn't moved in towards Whittier. It's gone southwest, virtually with the exception of a few areas between Night Island, the Night Island area, and the Montague area through the Montague Straits.
Do you feel there's a possibility that it could reach the western side of the Night Island Passage and get into the lower islands in Chenega and the southwest corner of Prince William Sound?
I believe that if with the wind going the same direction, it would probably go right through Montague Straits out into the Gulf and be churned up.
Pretty much exclusively down the strait, that's the deal.
Unless the wind shifts, or unless the overwhelming volume of it gets caught up along the edges of the islands that's going down.
Commander, any recommendation for prosecution as a third mate for piloting the ship without proper certification?
No, that's still part of the investigation. At the conclusion of the investigation, charges will be made.
Do you have to take that? The U.S. attorney, or can you do that yourself?
No, the Coast Guard action against an individual license is an administrative function. When charged, and he can either be found innocent, found guilty, and have his license suspended, his sentence of that license suspension could be suspended, or he could lose his license permanently.
Were any vessels endangered by the winds last night?
I didn't hear of any vessels having to call for assistance. I know they all took shelter. So.
Last night we asked all these people whether these winds, which were just starting to pick up, were going to have an effect on the cleanup, and they were all so upbeat and optimistic and said, no, we're ready to go and everything looks fine. Well, today we realized another wasted day, nothing's happened. Are these winds going to break up this ship possibly more? Could you give us what your best assessment of this thing is? Because I haven't really heard a strong answer on this yet.
Well, concerning the winds, I'm no expert at it, but after living here for 4 years, I know that they're very unpredictable and they change. So it's an educated guess as to what weather we're going to have tomorrow and the next day. As far as the ship being in trouble and breaking up, I don't think that's a concern at this time.
Not a concern or not a possibility?
Not a concern at this time.
And the pumping is not affected by these winds or this weather either?
Unless the ship starts moving a lot, or it gets very windy, where it's unsafe for the personnel on deck due to icing conditions and slippery and things, it shouldn't affect the mechanical functioning of the equipment.
So are you aware of a problem with crew members drinking alcohol in Valdez before heading out on ships?
No, I haven't heard that, but I haven't been involved in the investigation.
Not this case, but other cases?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Have you ever heard of a problem with crew members drinking alcohol in Valdez before heading out?
Not a problem, no, sir.
Your lieutenant governor told the TV crew today that had been the case. So that must have been known in Valdez.
Yesterday, the figure was 100 square miles approximately that the oil had covered. What would you say today? perimeter of the areas of breach.
I haven't had time to draw lines and compute, but you know, you can look on a scale chart and figure from the beginning of Naked Island down, halfway down Night Island right now, across the distance to half the distance to Montague, and figure that on up. It's a, you know, it's a longer area, but the oil isn't as concentrated in that area. You know, it was fairly concentrated in that 10 by 10 mile square.
Any estimate of miles of beaches?
No, not at this time. I've got to run, but I think there's going to be some more news conferences later on tonight, maybe, and hopefully we'll have some more information for you. Thank you.
Commander Steve McCall of the U.S. Coast Guard, who is the commander of the Valdez Detachment.
Would like to talk to you about wildlife concerns, though.
And he's also, by that designation, the port captain in Valdez, has just made a brief series of assessments. We now have someone coming up to talk about the wildlife impact. We will be anticipating an Exxon press conference later tonight. The Exxon conferences have been officially scheduled at 5 or 6, but have rarely started.
Work for the U.S. Department of Interior in Anchorage.
This is Sandra Bergman.
Let's give you a little bit of an update on what's happening with the wildlife. As I indicated at yesterday's press conference, Exxon has brought up representatives of the International Bird Rescue Research Center out of Berkeley, California, to actually set up a bird cleaning and rehabilitation facility in Valdez that is being set up at this time. They have also requested Dr. Randall Davis from the Hubs Marine Research Institute in San Diego to come up and set up a cleaning and rehabilitation center for sea otters. And I understand that Randall was due in today. I haven't met him personally yet, but we will be coordinating with him. The main problem with that we're facing in terms of cleaning and rehabilitation is actually collecting the wildlife. Because of the logistical constraints we're facing out in Prince William Sound, it's just very difficult to get out there with boats and try to actually retrieve any of the wildlife so that you can take them to the centers to attempt to clean and rehabilitate. It's not the policy of the International Bird Rescue Research Center, nor is it recommended by the Department of Interior for people to try to capture birds while they're in the water if they're oiled. We only recommend, as does the International Bird Rescue Research Center, that birds are captured once they come on shore. And seabirds will come on shore once they're oiled, because the oil affects the insulation capability of their feathers, and they're going to be getting cold, and they will come out of the water. The reason for that is that the safety of people trying to work with these animals is the most important thing, and we don't want anybody putting themselves at risk by chasing birds around in the water in boats. The birds that are seabirds and are on the water are probably going to dive, and you're not probably going to be able to catch them anyway. So we're faced with a situation where we would have to wait for the oil birds to come out on shore. There aren't lots of beaches in a lot of the areas for them to come out onto. You would be going out there in small boats trying to approach a beach. Typically, if the bird is in still fairly good health, you approach the beach, the bird goes back to the water. It's a very difficult situation. I was just personally involved in a bird cleaning and rehabilitation center several weeks ago. Seems like a long time ago now, but I just got back about a week before this happened, out in Dutch Harbor. And we set up, that was a federal response to a spill, and Interior was in charge of actually setting up the center and working through the whole thing. I was personally out on the beaches in Dutch Harbor trying to capture birds. I know the difficulties involved with that, and also the difficulties involved in trying to clean and rehabilitate and save birds. It's also very difficult to capture sea otters, and in contrast with birds, it's my understanding, based on the existing guidelines that exist, with respect to actually cleaning them, that only people trained in capturing and handling sea otters should be doing that. They're fairly good-sized animals, and they can be fairly dangerous animals to handle, and it's not something that you can just train the general public to go out and do. I have talked to a lot of volunteer organizations around the state today and yesterday. There's lots of people who want to help. That's very understandable, and we empathize with their position. The Department of Interior feels very comfortable with having the International Bird Rescue Research Center folks and Randall Davis heading up these two efforts. And we feel it's very important for any volunteers to work through them. We do not wish to see people going out there helter-skelter trying to do things on their own.
How bad is the impact of your being?
Right now, we don't have good information on that right now. I can tell you that some Fish and Wildlife Service and I believe some National Marine Fisheries Service folks went up in the same plane out of Cordova today, and they were able to take a look at Smith Island, the east side of Eleanor Island, Ingat and Knight Islands. As you all know, the weather conditions were not good today. I don't know how good their data is. I don't know how low they were able to get and what they were able to see. They're coming to Valdez tonight, so hopefully we'll get some first-hand information from them.
What the damage appears to be?
No, I don't. And the people from Fish and Wildlife Service who are going to go up and look at the situation with the birds could not get up because of the bad weather today. But there are people from all the resource agencies, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, National Marine Fisheries Service, and Department of Interior, Fish and Wildlife Service, who are out there, you know, looking to see what resources are out there and how they are being affected. But I personally don't have any specific numbers at this time.
When do you expect we might be able to get some numbers?
We all kind of reconnoiter at the end of every day, okay, and try to see what information everybody has collected.
Would there possibly be someone at the Exxon press conference maybe later?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
How many dead birds did you have reported at the end of yesterday?
At the end of yesterday, we had what I was saying is that we had a Fish and Wildlife Service person went out the day before and did a pretty good survey, and he personally saw 90 oiled birds and 2 oiled sea otters. There was also a report of, I believe, about 11 killer whales that had been surfacing in the slick. But you have to recognize that a killer whale in oil is somewhat different, but is a lot different than a sea otter or a bird because of their... A bird is going to be heavily affected because it's going to affect their plumage, and then the sea otters, because of their fur, it's going to disrupt the structure of their fur and cause problems. A whale obviously doesn't have feathers or fur in it, and the impacts on cetaceans as well as a lot of the pinnipeds may not be as severe, generally speaking.
Data was collected?
I'm sorry?
I didn't catch when that data was collected.
It's hard to keep track of what day it is. Day before yesterday.
How many of those birds were dead, by observation?
They were alive still there. I have 2 dead birds in my room. And that brings me to another point. We have been working to set up a monitoring program for the retrieval of dead wildlife, okay, and at this point in time, we are asking Exxon and everybody who has people who may be out on beaches doing any kind of activity to collect any dead wildlife that they come across, put them in a bag. We have developed, with the assistance of NOAA, and I meant to bring the copy of the map, I left it on my desk, but we have developed maps with information that people will fill out, who they are, you know, where they located, time of day, their phone numbers, and then we will have they are going to bring those the dead wildlife back to the ADF&G office here in Valdez, and a qualified Fish and Wildlife Service representative will go through and identify what those birds and if we get any marine mammals in, they will be doing that and keeping track of that. We don't anticipate, however, and wouldn't want to lead you to believe that we're going to retrieve every bird or marine mammal that may die as a result of this incident. That's not going to be the case. But we have established that mechanism to monitor wildlife that people come across on the beaches.
Do you have an estimate of how many birds are at risk in the sound and how many sea mammals?
I should have brought another piece of information that I have. I don't have it with me, so I know, we're talking certainly thousands of seabirds, and depending on what area of the sound, either hundreds or thousands of sea otters. And I would defer to the NOAA folks on the estimates of seals and sea lions. Large numbers.
How about the general direction of the slick? Is it moving towards heavily densely bird populations?
There's bird populations all over the place, Frank. That's certainly safe to say.
How many CR did you say?
And depending on the area of the sound, in some areas there are, you might have like 300, but it's my understanding that as you move down to Jackie, you can help me.
Have you been there?
Myself personally?
Yes.
In the sound?
I'm a person. I live down there.
Right.
How many CR are you talking about?
I'm just saying it depends on the area. There are some areas on an island south of there that where there are thousands of sea lions.
No, there's not thousands. You better talk to somebody, a fisherman, like what he's talking about. There's not thousands. Maybe we have 500. There's not thousands.
Okay.
I think I called you earlier.
Any other questions?
You talk to a fisherman that lives down there, that knows what he's talking about. I don't know who the hell is in this place tonight, but Ellie and I, Matthew, live down there at East Shammy Bay. We know what's there. Okay. They're starving to death. You should get some input from us. I'm serious.
Okay.
They're starving to death. They're dying on the beaches. Do I have a fisherman here tonight? No. Not one. But where's your fisherman? Not one. This whole night.
So, I might just comment that the Fish and Wildlife Service people that we're working with have, some of the folks have been studying sea otters in Prince William Sound for up to 15 years. There are actually, I believe, about 50 sea otters that are collared that they're actually monitoring right now. And we're getting information on their location and numbers from those individuals. Any other question?
Are you familiar with a federal study by Professor Tom Williams regarding sea otters? Does that
I'm not, but I know those folks have to.
The next question, you are not yet cleaning birds, right?
No, as far as I know, no live birds have been brought into the center, and that the oiled birds that were seen by the Fish and Wildlife Service person and the oiled sea otters that I mentioned earlier could not have been captured. They were still offshore and were not on the beaches and having problems. The representative of the International Bird Rescue Research Center, Alice Berkner, the executive director, did an overflight yesterday and looked very closely at Bly Island, which was an area of concern. I think she saw maybe 20 oiled birds. There were not large numbers of oiled birds in that particular area yesterday. But again, I don't know what the situation is now with the oil moving into a different area.
A lot that you just never find.
I think that's fair to say.
Any sense of the percentage of how many you find versus how many are out there?
No, that's hard to know.
Is there any thought to establishing a cleanup station closer to that area, perhaps in a village out there instead of here?
That may be a consideration. Certainly, as the oil continues moving farther away from Valdez, that gets to be a real problem, because by the time you retrieve, say, an oiled bird out of the water, you can't have it sitting in a box for 12 hours while you're going back to Valdez. The facility requirements, it takes lots and lots of hot water and lots of heat, and it may be very tricky to set up. It may be impossible, I don't know, but that's something that, that will have to be looked at. About whether appropriate facilities exist in the area, if someone could make do with something. And I might just say that this is not something that, this is the Alaska Regional Response Team made, actually the federal on-scene coordinators requested the Alaska Regional Response Team to put together some guidelines for dealing with oiled wildlife, the wildlife oiled both birds and marine mammals. And the guidelines were developed, and they were adopted in December 1988, and I happen to be the person that chaired the working group that put those together, which is one of the reasons I'm here. We thought through the whole process, looked at all the different species, what could be done in terms of deterring them away from oil, in terms of actually cleaning them, put together lists of experts within the agencies, outside the agencies, sent letters all over the state pre-identifying existing facilities. We know what the facility requirements are for birds and sea otters. We had an inventory of all the equipment and materials available in the state of Alaska to set up these centers, down to how many Q-tips they had. So we luckily had those guidelines in place. We're the only one in the country that had them in place, and they were invaluable. 2 weeks ago when we went out to Dutch Harbor and used them did a rehabilitation project there, and we're basically using them as our guidelines in this particular situation. So we are prepared. Pamela Bergman, B-E-R-G-M-A-N-N.
B-E-R-G.
It seems to take a long time to get out to Dutch Harbor, at least from what the press was reporting, from the time the oil started happening. Could you tell about your response at Dutch Harbor to that?
In terms of us getting out to Dutch Harbor to respond, we are back in our offices in Anchorage, and we are notified immediately when there's a problem. Our particular office in the Interior coordinates with all the Interior bureaus, and we are on the phone with every appropriate bureau asking for resource information. Very early on in that spill, I was in contact with the International Bird Rescue Research Center folks, apprising them of the situation. I was in touch with the oil spill cooperatives who had the equipment and materials we might need, saying, this is the situation, you're notified, stand by. We called the Alaska Raptor Rehabilitation Center. We have a cooperative agreement with them. Everybody was basically on standby. And it was not until, I can't remember now how many days it was until the spill, but there appeared to be no real impacts on the birds. And then all of a sudden, somebody called up and said, we have 25 old birds on the beach. The Coast Guard looked at me and said, you want to go? Go. And we went. And within 24 hours, we made our assessment of what needed to be done and made that recommendation to the Coast Guard. And again, it was based on the guidelines, and we couldn't have done that so quickly if we hadn't already done all this pre-planning. And then within another 24 hours, we had a center set up, and we were going.
Who are you with?
The U.S. Department of Interior. And I live in Anchorage. I'm with the feds. And I live in Anchorage, and I spent over 40 days in Prince William Sound sea kayaking. Not in this end, but in the other end. Okay.
When will all people be mobilized to start doing the actual rehabilitation?
That's something that will be under the control of Wallace Berkner and Randy Davis. They are calling the shots on that, and we are peeking over their shoulder, making sure we feel comfortable with what they're doing. And as I said earlier, certainly speaking for the Department of Interior, we feel comfortable with what they've done. It's just a very difficult situation because it's so difficult in terms of what you can do. In contrast to the Washington State spill recently, where there was road access, lots of beaches, people could get out there and walk and get the birds, you just don't have that here. That's the problem.
This is when you can get out there.
Boats. Boats. And coordinating that and making sure people are safe and all that sort of thing is difficult, but they are organizing that.
I'll just come in, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating anything, but do you also have responsibility for animals such as sea otters and sea lions, as well as birds?
The Department of Interior is a trustee for all of the birds or migratory waterfowl, and also sea otters, polar bears, and walrus as well, but we don't have to worry about the last two in this particular case. National Marine Fisheries Service is a trustee for all of the rest of the seals, the pinnipeds, and the cetaceans, which are the whales. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is a co-trustee with National Marine Fisheries Service and Fish and Department of Interior for all of those resources, and they're the primary spokesperson for the fisheries resource.
Sea otters are protected animals in a sort of special way.
Marine Animal Protection Act, yes.
And what's happened about them?
Maybe I can... Yeah, I just answered that for everybody, so maybe if there are any other questions, and then I can just speak with this gentleman.
Thank you.
Okay. And I'll be available, I will be coming back here with the Coast Guard for every press conference, so I'll be providing updates as necessary. Thanks.
Pamela Bergman of the U.S. Department of the Interior.
A Civic Center coordinator asked me to pass along a message. Telephone room right next door has been set up with 10 telephone lines, and there are a couple of restrictions. Building hours may vary slightly, so please understand if somebody asks you to leave so they can close the building up. No smoking in the room, smoking in the hallway only. And also, of course, please leave it clean. And in addition, when I was sitting in the back a few minutes ago, you had several questions about the weather to Commander McCall. I happen to be the chief weatherman in town, as well as being an on-site announcer. So if you've got any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer anything. Much better. I think that we'll see quite a bit of improvement in the next 24 hours. We've already seen quite a bit of drop-off. And we'll see a significant drop-off here in Valdez in the next 24 hours, and we'll see a slow drop-off out in the spill area over the next 24 hours. Well, we had a peak gust at the airport of 70 miles an hour this morning, 64 miles an hour here in town, and a little over 50 out in the Narrows Arm and spill area. Well, cloud cover is going to increase, unfortunately. We'll start to see some cloud cover come in probably late tonight, tomorrow. Maybe a slight chance of a few snow showers late tomorrow, early the next day. There's nothing real big coming in as far as any big snow or anything like that. But the good news is the wind should start to come down. So conditions will be quite a bit better out there for the people to work. Yes, it is, unfortunately, and it makes it very difficult for us to forecast it, unfortunately, because it can build up just in a couple hours, bam, and all of a sudden you get a new situation. But this is fairly typical, unfortunately, for this part of Alaska. It can go from flat calm to... I think the unusual thing was the 3 days of very calm weather, especially out in the spill area. That was not normal weather out there. That was exceptionally mild, exceptionally nice, and unfortunately, of course, it only lasted 3 days. But 3 days is better than none at all, so...
Lynn Crystal, City Councilman of Valdez and the head forecaster ahead of the local National Weather Service office, talking a bit about the forecast coming up. This is Dave Hammack with the Valdez Civic Center. We're awaiting word about when the evening Exxon conference will be. Evidently, it will not be at 5 o'clock. We'll keep our fingers crossed and hope that it's not as late tonight as it was last night. You may recall that last night it didn't actually get underway until after 8:30 in the evening. We had a briefing by Commander McCall from the Coast Guard, and then a briefing by Pamela Bergman with the U.S. Department of Interior, who was helping to coordinate or to observe, monitor the work to identify and clean oiled birds in the Sound. And then a brief comment or two by weatherman Lynn Crystal of the National Weather Service office based here in Valdez. The big news and the bad news is that the oil slick is extending down toward Montague Island. Evidently, or from the, at least from this perspective, it seems that the spill has gotten out of hand. It is not contained. It is moving toward Montague Strait. The possibility of many of the island's beaches in the southwest corner of Prince William Sound being oiled is increasing. Already there is oil sheen along the beaches in Naked Island. There are lightly oiled shoreline at Seal Island and heavy shoreline oiling at both Smith Islands. The Night Island area as well could well be in jeopardy within a matter of hours. Spill is moving in that direction, and we hope to have more information later tonight, later this afternoon or early evening, when the Exxon press conference does get underway. I want to thank KCHU volunteers Kim Hartman and Lee Schmedlein for their assistance in broadcasting this conference. Our engineer back at KCHU Studios has been Laura Lee. I'm Dave Hammack, and returning you now to KCHU Studios.